clean, and that you have the ability to make it that way. Use your after pictures as a guide to help you remember what any particular area looks like when it's actually clean, and to serve as a rough template for how to get that space back to neat and organized. So, before you tackle that closet from hell or prepare to do battle with the crap that ate the dining room table, take a picture. Then snap a few during the process, and take one when you're done. Your brain may not see the improvements you've made, but your camera sure as hell will. It's your objective eye that sees things much more clearly and accurately than the ones in your head when you're in the middle of everything. Fire up the camera. It's worth it. More stuff than storage. In a perfect world, cleaning and organizing coexist peacefully. In the real world, sometimes we're good at one but not the other, and sometimes we're just terrible at both. Ultimately, before you can begin to clean, you need to uncover enough surface area to actually have something to clean. This requires organizational skills. This also, however, is where so many people stall out and give up before they ever make any progress. In its own way, organization is more difficult than cleaning, because it's not always dictated by common sense, and it's often overwhelming and frustrating. There's no shortage of books and articles and websites telling you how to organize your stuff. Most people try over and over again to get organized and end up falling short of success, only to turn around and try the same thing again. And again. Shockingly, it rarely works those times either. So it's worthwhile to take a step back and look at why so many of these organizational tips and systems don't work for so many people, and try a new approach that does. One of the main reasons we give up on trying to organize our stuff is, frankly, that it's a lot of effort. Not many of us have unlimited time and energy to devote to getting our mess under control. But here's another way that 2010s and working in small sections can come in handy. A full overhaul of, say, your closet can take hours or days, leaving you completely worn out at the end and unlikely to ever want to go through the whole process again. But when you give yourself small, attainable goals, you'll end up making far more progress in the long term and not being so afraid of the upkeep. By tackling one drawer, shelf, or cabinet at a time, you're less likely to find yourself giving up, frustrated and surrounded by every item you own strewn about the floor with no idea what to do with any of them. We're disorganized primarily because we have more stuff than storage. There are two solutions: less stuff or more storage. Less stuff is almost always the better option. You've probably seen all the helpful tips and how to get organized lists that tell you about cute, creative storage solutions to organize a whole lot of crap you probably don't need. Everything is much easier to organize when you don't have so much of it. Not to mention that storage is expensive, takes up a lot of room, and can be overwhelming to set up. The dark side of minimalism. Less stuff can be a bit of a trap, however. The recent obsession with decluttering has its downsides. The quest for minimalism can ultimately leave you feeling like a failure if you don't get rid of every single item you own and surround yourself with a sterile, Spartan environment. You should absolutely aim to reduce the number of items you have, especially if you have a lot of things that you don't use or don't love, but not to the point where you end up chucking everything you own. Perhaps more important is figuring out what you actually need, and learning how to work with that. Let's face it, to function well in modern life, you need a certain amount of stuff. You don't necessarily need 5 of every item you own, but unless you're thinking of moving to a mountaintop and living only off the land, purging everything but your bed, one set of dishes, and a single change of clothes isn't much more helpful than keeping every item that crosses your path. Compulsive decluttering and compulsive hoarding are opposite sides of the same coin. They both result in extreme behavior that dictates how you interact with the stuff around you. Getting rid of everything you own is not healthier or any better to aspire to than never getting rid of anything at all, And yet we tend to view a minimalist home as something we should constantly be striving toward. More important than just chucking every one of your possessions is to find a good balance between utility and minimalism. A balance that allows you to take a critical look at the things you have, use, and need, and figure out what to keep, what to get rid of, and how to organize what's left. While minimalism might seem like a noble goal, it's important to realize that it might be unattainable. If you're constantly questing to get rid of things, you may never be satisfied, because it's basically impossible to reduce your possessions to nothing. A better perspective, then, may be to look at what a realistic and attainable amount of stuff to have is. This amount is going to vary greatly from person to person and household to household, and there's no real right answer. Figuring out your minimum workable amount of stuff is tricky, and the process of deciding what stays and what goes isn't terribly straightforward. You need to consider an item's utility. Do you use it? How often? Do you have other items that have the same use? Consider its value, not just monetarily, but its value to you. Consider how you feel about it. Does its presence evoke any emotions in you, positive or negative? If something's very presence in your home stresses you out, why are you keeping it? All of these factors are important to weigh when you're examining your stuff and trying to decide what to keep and what to get rid of, and it's never as cut and dried as it seems like it should be. Redefine minimalism to fit your own life. Don't get caught up in the trap of minimalism as it's presented in books, magazines, and websites. It's a nice, soothing aesthetic, but it's really not practical for most people. Reducing your number of possessions is a great goal. It'll make a huge difference in the level of mess in your home, and make everything easier to keep on top of. Just try not to get overwhelmed making your home look like carefully staged pictures of rooms that actual people never use. And then there's the whole concept of decluttering. How do you decide what is, in fact, unnecessary? Is it all of the things you own? Everything that's taking up space? Everything that's visible? Only the unnecessary stuff? By setting up this whole category apart from cleaning and organizing, we're placing as much importance on throwing shit away as we do on every other aspect of keeping a house. And while getting rid of unwanted or extraneous stuff is a critical part of getting organized, people tend to think that once the decluttering phase is complete, their homes are magically tidy and organized forever. Getting to the point of having less stuff is important, but there's far more to getting a mess under control than just that. Put your effort, instead, into making sure that all of the things you own have both a use and a place. If something has a use but no place, it's always going to seem in the way. And if something has a place but no use, it's taking up valuable storage space that might be better occupied by an item that has a useful value to you. Don't try to get rid of everything you own. You'll drive yourself to frustration just trying. And don't make the mistake of thinking that once you've pared down your stuff, you're done. You aren't. That's just one part of it. You still need to do a bunch more on a regular basis to keep things in order. It's a great start, and an important part of the process, but it's just one step of many. Should it stay, or should it go? When you're trying to decide what to keep and what to toss, you need to ask yourself some pertinent questions. For example, when was the last time I used this? Sure, maybe that kitchen blowtorch seemed like a great idea at the time, but how many times have you actually made creme brulee? And how long ago was that? If you can't remember when you last used it, you don't need to hang on to it. Am I ever going to need this again? Admit it. You looked hot in those bell-bottoms. But ask yourself, even if bell-bottoms come back in style, are you going to wear them? Or is that phase best left in the past forever? If an item's usefulness has passed, get rid of it. Am I keeping this because there's a small chance I might need it later? So you've never been camping, but that camping kitchen set was just too cute to pass up. Sure, you can't sleep without your 800 thread count sheets, and bugs of all kinds horrify you, but you might decide to rough it sometime, right? Be honest. You won't. Am I holding on to it because I feel guilty for spending money on it? Deciding to get rid of something you parted with your hard-earned money for can be difficult. But keeping something indefinitely when you don't use it isn't going to get you your money back. Accept that the cash is gone, and aim to make your financial decisions a little more carefully next time. Gifts, or just what I needed! More stuff! When attempting to sort through possessions, many people get stuck on what to do with gifts. Gifts are tricky. They fall into a category of stuff that has a lot of emotion attached to it. Gifts inspire nostalgia, fondness, regret, even guilt. We so often feel guilty about getting rid of gifts that we end up hanging on to stuff that we never would have willingly brought into our homes in the first place. We feel like it's a betrayal of the giver to get rid of gifts, that somehow not keeping the things people give us is a reflection of our relationship with them. It's not. Why does getting rid of gifts cause us so much stress? When we have items all wrapped up in emotions, we cease making decisions about them based on their own merits and allow our emotions to guide us. That's where we get into trouble. When inanimate items start taking on emotional importance, they become far more difficult to deal with in a logical, organized way. The gift itself doesn't feel anything. The emotions that are attached to it come a little bit from the giver and primarily from the recipient. So stop worrying that you're treating a gift badly by getting rid of it. You won't hurt its feelings, I promise, because it doesn't have any. You should look critically at gifts the same way you look at any other item you're trying to make a decision about. Do you use it? Do you love it? Is it necessary? Is it stressing you out? Why are you keeping it? The answers will usually jump right out at you. You don't use it. If you love it, it's only because of who gave it to you. It's unnecessary. Its presence stresses you out. You're only keeping it because you feel guilty getting rid of it. With any other item, your course of action would be clear. Get rid of it. But the fact that it's a gift gives you pause. It shouldn't. The real value of a gift is in the giving and receiving of it. The actual item itself is far less important. The crucial thing to remember is that once a gift is given, it belongs to you, and you're free to get rid of it whenever and however you please. It's incredibly rare that the giver of a gift will demand proof of its continued place in your home. And if you think that might happen, have them over for dinner, show them their knick-knack proudly displayed, and then send it on its way to the recycle bin once they've left. The giver picked it out and gave it to you. You were, at least convincingly, pleased by it, and now the gift-giving interaction is done. It made them happy to give it. It made you happy to receive it. And now it's over. The thing is yours. Make it go away if you want it to go away. It doesn't make you a bad person or an ungrateful gift recipient if you don't hang on to a gift for all eternity. How not to get rid of your stuff. First and foremost, when you're getting rid of stuff, don't make it someone else's problem. It's really appealing to think that our discarded items will be useful, cherished items for other people, but that's not always true. Donating things is a great way to thin out your belongings, but make sure that what you're donating isn't something that you've just made someone else responsible for permanently getting rid of. Before donating anything, double-check with the organization you're donating to make sure your items are in appropriate condition and that you're following the guidelines for donation. If something is broken, outdated, or no longer useful, you're really just passing the buck on ending its life cycle when you know good and well that it was time for it to get tossed or recycled. Giving things to people you know is tricky, too. Many of your friends and family won't say no when you offer things to them, but it doesn't necessarily mean they want them. While it's appealing to think these people will love and treasure our secondhand belongings, most people already have more stuff than they know what to do with, and unloading more crap on them is hardly doing anyone a favor. So often, what we give to other people in the name of streamlining our belongings becomes a burden on the people we give those things to. Then they're in the position of having to evaluate and decide what to do with your cast-offs. Don't do that to them. Think about the process you're going through right now. Do you really want to be responsible for putting another person through the same ordeal? Sorting through a bunch of stuff and desperately trying to get rid of unwanted things? Your friends, family, and neighbors aren't convenient receptacles for your cast-offs. Don't treat them as if they are. A better way to go about it is to ask people if there's anything they need, generally, or want, specifically. If your brother tells you he really needs a coffee pot and you've got a spare, that decision is easy. If your coworker has always coveted your laptop bag and you were trying to decide if it was worth hanging on to, that information might help you out. If your cousin has her eye on your favorite pair of shoes, it's perfectly fine to tell her those aren't up for grabs. But hey, if you want to clear them out at some point in the future, you have a place to start. Make considerate, informed decisions about giving your stuff away. Don't just transfer your problems to someone else because it's easier for you. Storage. Once you've pared things down to items that are useful or necessary or that just make you happy, you need to figure out where the hell to put them. To do this effectively, you need to look at a few things. How often do you use it? Where do you use it? Do you have somewhere logical near where you use it to put it? Can you create somewhere logical to put it? Ideally, your storage will allow you easy access to an item, so it's quick to grab and quick to put away, and be close to where you use it. Storing your heavy blender on a top shelf behind your pots and pans is going to make it hard to get to, and a pain to put away when you make your daily smoothie. Infrequently used items can be stored in more inconvenient places, but your everyday items should live someplace where it's just as easy to put them away as it is to leave them out. The more convenient a storage space, the more likely you'll actually put things away, rather than leaving them out to deal with at some mysterious point in the future. Also keep in mind the realities of your life. If you're short, vertical storage up to the ceiling is going to be of limited use to you. You'd be better off exploring storage options that are accessible, like floor and under furniture storage. If you have mobility issues, storage that requires you to climb a flight of stairs to retrieve something and again to put it away is best saved for those things that you won't need to get to very often. If you have a cat who loves to climb, open cabinets are probably not the best idea, since all of your meals will be served with a side of Smokey's hair. What might seem like a perfect solution in theory might end up being completely incompatible with your life. Some more things to keep in mind regarding storage. Keep it closed. Open storage, shelves, cabinets without fronts, etc., tends to look messy, no matter how well things are organized. If that's your only option, consider creating a uniform front using boxes or baskets, or closing off your storage with fabric or improvised doors. Open storage usually also requires more frequent dusting. Nobody wants that. Magazines and home blogs love depicting open storage, and it always seems to look great when they do it. But keep in mind that how things play out in real life is always very different than how they look in carefully staged photos. Mismatched storage creates visual chaos. A lot of the time, we end up with mismatched storage because, frankly, storage is really expensive, and buying a matched set all at once isn't always possible. The cheapest option is usually pretty appealing, but just keep in mind that a piecemeal assortment of different storage can result in a messy finished look, no matter how much work went into the actual organization. Cheap is in no way bad. Just make sure it's cheap that matches well enough to look put together. Storage is expensive. Often very expensive. When you look at pictures of well-organized spaces with lots of great storage, those spaces usually have one thing in common. You can't afford them. And that sucks so much. A lot of the time, magazine spreads feature extravagant built-ins, closet systems, or well-constructed matching pieces. And for many people, that's just not an option. Since an elaborate storage system is out of reach for many of us, keep the amount of stuff that you have to a reasonable minimum. Your storage needs will be far easier to deal with and far cheaper to implement. Only store what you need. Don't store stuff you don't want. And don't create storage black holes. Random baskets and bins without a purpose are just asking to be catch-alls for crap you should really be dealing with in a different way. Empty storage can be an appealing trap. Somewhere you can throw stuff so you don't need to make any decisions about it and it's not out in the open. Don't do that, because you will at some point need to make a decision about the random assortment of crap that you tossed in those baskets and bins. Plus, you'll need to buy more of those pricey bins to keep it all in. Only store stuff you've already decided to keep and use. Small spaces require creative storage. Look up and down to use all of your vertical space. Store things under or behind furniture. Use all the available space in closets and cabinets, including the backs of doors. Look into multipurpose furniture like ottomans that function as seating as well as storage, or coffee or end tables with built-in storage spots. These pieces are generally more expensive, but they'll save space and money in the long run because you won't have to pay for additional storage down the road. Don't grow your stuff beyond your storage. Once you have a workable storage system in place, do your best not to expand your stuff beyond the confines of that space. When you start needing to add more storage solutions to a system that you once considered complete, it's probably time to look into paring down your possessions again. Finding the right balance of stuff and storage is a bit of a tricky game. Don't get stuck in the self-perpetuating cycle of needing to reduce your possessions to less than what you need, but make sure that you have enough room for the stuff you have, and a logical place to put it. With enough thought and effort, you can get to a stuff-storage balance that makes sense and doesn't empty your bank account or force you to tear your home apart trying to accommodate more stuff than you can store. Once everything has a place, you can then move on to keeping everything clean, organized, and comfortable. Cleaning basics. One of the most common reasons people don't clean, coming in a close second after, "I don't wanna," is that they don't really know how. There's no small amount of judgment and assumptions associated with people who don't or can't clean. And yes, sometimes it's because someone is lazy or inconsiderate, but those are far from the only reasons someone might not be a great, or good, or even adequate, housekeeper. Sure, cleaning isn't exactly rocket science, but if you never learned how, it can be intimidating as hell. And that's an obstacle to getting started. Not to mention that the longer you go without knowing how to clean, the harder it becomes to obtain those skills. But note that I said harder, not impossible. Learning how to clean as an adult is just like learning how to drive a stick shift or communicate in another language. It takes lots of practice, lots of trial and error, and a desire to learn. There's a plethora of reasons people may not have the skills needed to clean a house, and the environment you're raised in can be one of the biggest contributing factors. Those who grew up in homes where they never learned to clean start out at a disadvantage without those fundamental housekeeping skills. Those who grew up in homes where everything was done for them are also not in a great position. If you come from one of these environments, don't despair. It's not too late. Fortunately, we live in a time when instructions for just about anything are free and readily available. If you don't know how to do something, it's really easy to find out how. There's an awful lot of really specialized cleaning knowledge to be had out there. But, as in anything, some basics will go a long way toward giving you a solid foundation. Once you have a grasp of some of the fundamental tasks that need to get done, it's fairly straightforward to apply that knowledge to other things you might not have experience with. So if you live in a messy home because you're not quite sure how to keep it from getting or staying that way, there is absolutely hope for you. Don't be ashamed if you don't know this stuff. It's just some skills and knowledge that you haven't acquired yet. There's always more time to learn. What you need and what you don't. First things first, make sure you're well equipped with the supplies you need to clean. One of the biggest lies sold to you by the cleaning and housekeeping industry is that you need specially designed equipment and products for every task. That's a load of bullshit. Don't fall for it. You don't need expensive or specialized stuff to keep your house clean. You really only need a few very basic things, most of which you might have on hand already. Anyone who recommends a must-have product as the only way to accomplish something probably benefits in some way from you buying it. There are some specialized supplies that may make cleaning certain things easier, but they aren't necessary, regardless of what the ads tell you. At a bare minimum, I could keep a house UFYH-approved clean with just water, white vinegar, dish soap, some rags or cloths, and a broom. And laundry detergent, because while you certainly can make your own, that's kind of a huge pain in the ass, and the pre-made stuff already exists and can be found pretty cheap. Vacuums are great for carpet, but in a pinch, you can absolutely sweep a rug. Just ask my Nana. Insisting on your need for the right tools and products is just another way to put off getting started. It's another excuse to keep yourself from jumping in and doing the best you can with what you have. Make no mistake, you can get a lot, maybe even everything, done using only what you already have or with a few easily and cheaply obtained basics. Don't postpone getting to it any more than you already have by deciding you need to go out, go to the store, stand in the cleaning aisle staring at hundreds of different choices, pick out some stuff, spend a ton of money you don't want to part with, and then go back home, organize it all, and then never actually clean anything because you've already done way too much and you're exhausted. That's a pretty tough trap to get out of. My favorite all-purpose cleaning solution is half hot water, half vinegar, and a glug of dish soap. That's the technical term. Mixed up in a spray bottle. Showers, counters, stovetops, toilets, you name it, you can clean it with this. Or with one of its components. A combination of time, let the cleaning solution or hot water do the bulk of the work for you by letting it sit for a bit, and a little elbow grease when needed can accomplish just about any cleaning task. If you're looking for another multi-purpose tool that's a little bit more of an investment, consider a steam mop. You can do all of your hard floors with it, and never need anything besides water to use it. Add to that some rags for dusting and wiping down, a broom, a vacuum, if you have carpets, and some laundry detergent, and you're pretty much good to go right away. You don't need a million things, and you don't need to spend a lot of money. With your small but effective arsenal of tools and basics, you're well armed to tackle all the dirt and debris that comes along with living your life. Oh, I can hear what comes next. But bleach! Most people are absolutely 100% convinced that you cannot clean a house without bleach. I disagree. I think that bleach is generally overused and almost always underdiluted. One of the biggest problems with bleach is that you shouldn't ever mix it with anything except water. Using bleach and just about anything else together, ammonia-based cleaning products, hydrogen peroxide, vinegar, alcohol, etc., can create chemical reactions that cause health problems like respiratory issues and skin irritation or burns. Bleach should only be mixed with water, and it should always be mixed with water. A solution of at most 1 to 10 bleach to water is the standard recommended dilution for everything up to and including disinfecting. When used correctly and safely, bleach can be quite useful. But it's not necessary, even for disinfecting. In the United States, the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, tests and labels products as sanitizing or disinfecting. So read your labels if you're looking to disinfect without using bleach. And what about convenience items like sanitizing wipes and single-use dusters and the like? No one is going to dispute that these things can be terrible for the environment. And they can get pretty expensive, too. But if wipes are going to mean the difference between cleaning your house or not, wipe away and figure out how to offset the environmental impact in another way. There is already a lot of guilt wrapped up in cleaning. Don't let arguments against convenience items deter you from getting stuff done. Convenience cleaning products exist for a reason. They're convenient. They save time and effort. They don't make you a bad person. Life is full of balances and compromises, so just figure out how to balance convenience with environmental and financial responsibility. There are plenty of DIY solutions for making your own cleaning wipes and such, but it's totally okay if you don't have the energy, time, or inclination to do so. We don't all live in an ideal world of frugality and environmentalism, armed with the ability and desire to create every consumer item from scratch. So use whatever tools you have at your disposal to get the job done, and let go of the guilt. There are always going to be people who disagree with this, who think that disposable products are always bad and have no place. If you're one of those people, don't use them. Simple. If you're someone who needs to use these products, especially when you're just getting started, do what you need to do and try not to get wrapped up in guilt about it. Try, too, not to get caught up in the natural trap. The problem with terms like natural and toxic and chemical is that these days they're all essentially meaningless. Don't fool yourself. Everything is a chemical, even water. Chemical doesn't mean bad, and natural doesn't mean good. Lots of things are natural that you wouldn't want to be in extended contact with, like poison ivy and hornets and manure. And lots of natural things are also toxic, like botulism and deadly mushrooms. Be a discerning customer when it comes to your products, and also be wary of jargon and buzzwords. Don't get drawn in by something just because it's labeled natural, or pushed away because someone on the internet said that something is a toxic chemical. These terms are overused and misused to the point of being useless. They're just another way to manipulate you into consuming what someone wants to sell you. Learn to recognize these buzzwords for what they are. Ultimately nonsensical, and an attempt to elicit an emotional and financial reaction without much examination on the part of the consumer. Where to begin? Most people say their biggest problem with cleaning is that they don't know where to start. And when you're staring down a whole house mess with no end in sight, it's definitely a logical concern. It's difficult to prioritize where to start or what's most important. If you're stuck at the beginning, a good rule of thumb is to start with stuff that smells bad, or has the potential to smell bad. So garbage, dishes, and laundry then. If you're lucky enough to have a washer and dryer in your home, start a load of laundry first thing. If doing laundry requires hauling everything to the laundromat, gather all your dirty clothes and your laundry supplies together and make an appointment with yourself for a few hours to go deal with it. And then follow through. Continue by collecting all of the obvious trash and recycling that you can, and remove it from your house entirely. Then gather up dishes and put them in the sink to soak. This will make washing them later a whole lot easier. Keep in mind that laundry and dishes have 3 steps. Wash, dry, and put it away, goddammit. Once those 3 things have been taken care of, you're moving firmly from dirty to messy. And that's a big deal. If there's something in your home that causes you a disproportionate amount of stress, and yes, sometimes this thing is going to be everything, but see if one specific thing jumps out at you. This might be where you need to start, regardless of whether or not it's the worst or stinkiest or messiest. Sometimes, mentally, you just need to get the thing that's bothering you the most out of the way before you can even start to think about moving on to something else. I'm a big proponent of starting with the thing you're dreading the most. Not only do you get it done and over with right away before it has the chance to take over any more of your time and attention, but you give yourself the opportunity to feel like such a rock star when you've vanquished your housekeeping white whale. Once you've done what previously seemed impossible, everything else seems a little bit more attainable and a little less scary. Having a dreaded task hanging over your head can make everything else seem much more difficult than it actually is. So go ahead and just get it done first. Once the big, scary thing is done, the mental block that's preventing you from moving on to the next thing may very well disappear. What to do and when? Once you have the tools and supplies you need to get going, and you know where to start, now what? How, exactly, do you clean? It's one of those things that seems like it should be incredibly obvious to everyone everywhere. But if you never learned how to clean, it's like trying to read a book that everyone around you loves but is written in a language that you've never seen before. Fortunately, it's pretty straightforward. And here are a few tips that will help you begin to tackle any mess. Work from top to bottom. Floors should be the last thing you clean. Start with your largest flat surface. Clear it off and then move on to the next flat surface. Clean dry before you clean wet. For example, dust before wiping with a damp cloth, and sweep before mopping. The great thing about cleaning is that even if you do it wrong, it's rarely, if ever, a catastrophe. Even if you have absolutely no idea how to clean, as long as whatever you're cleaning ends up less dirty than when you started, you win! Sure, it is technically possible to get it wrong, but in general, as long as you stay away from scrubbing or scouring something to the point of damage, using a too harsh cleaning solution, smashing things apart, or lighting things on fire, you're probably okay. It might not be ideal, maybe it could be cleaner, but it's definitely not the end of the world if it ain't perfect. So allow yourself to make some mistakes while you're learning. The trial and error process is great because as you're learning, things are getting clean. Win-win! Once you learn how to clean stuff, the next thing to tackle is how often to clean different things. An easy cheat to remember is that things that are unusable after one use or so need to be cleaned as they're used. So that means dishes, some clothes, and litter boxes. Cats tend to have stricter standards for clean than most humans. What you use every day should be cleaned at least weekly. The shower, the toilet, and the sheets fall into that category. For just about everything else, monthly or as needed is usually fine. Remember that the intervals that work for you and your life may not match up with what other lists and schedules are telling you. When you're first getting started, err on the side of more often, and then scale back and adjust as needed. For example, if you wear a uniform to work, laundry once a week may not cut it. You might need to wash clothes every 2 days. Don't get too wrapped up in how often someone else, even me, tells you to clean things. Come up with a plan that works for you, and then stick with it. A critical part of figuring out when to do things is realizing that cleaning is a continuous cycle. You're going to clean everything, and it's going to look great and beautiful. But then you're going to continue living your life, and it's going to get messed up again. This doesn't mean you're a failure. It's just what happens. There is no one alive who is such a great housekeeper that they only have to clean things once ever. In fact, the measure of success of someone's housekeeping ability is probably that they manage to do things at exactly the right intervals. Because, say it with me, nothing stays clean forever. You use your home, so it gets messy and dirty and needs to be cleaned again. It can be incredibly discouraging to see all of your hard work come undone just from regular life happening. But don't get too down on yourself about it. There's no way to avoid it, and it happens to all of us. The best you can do is to clean often enough that the mess doesn't get too terrible before it's time to reset to clean again. Small spaces. So, you might be sitting in your dorm room, studio apartment, or bedroom in someone else's house, having listened this far, and thinking, "This advice is fine, I guess, but I don't have a whole freaking house." Fair enough. Trying to maintain an entire existence's worth of stuff in a tiny little space brings its own set of annoying problems. When you're dealing with a smaller space like a dorm room or a single bedroom, every single bit of organization becomes critically important. When you have less space overall to deal with, a little bit of mess looks pretty huge. You have to be smarter and more creative about storage. You need to pare down your belongings and keep only what's useful and loved. Easy, right? Just kidding! It sucks! It can be pretty difficult to maintain a clean and organized environment in a space better suited for tiny garden gnomes than actual human beings. But it can be done. Only keep what you need. Is there anything good about a small living space? Of course there is. It takes a lot less effort to keep it clean. Everything takes just a fraction of the time. Maintenance is considerably less involved, even though it's more frequent. You don't have to dedicate huge amounts of time to keep small spaces clean. You don't have to start over again in a whole bunch of different rooms. You just need to think on a smaller scale and re-examine your habits and schedules in order to keep on top of a smaller space. To start with, when you're dealing with such limited space, you won't need half the shit you have. The best, most effective way to keep things clean and organized in a small space is to have less stuff. By paring down your possessions, you make your cleaning and maintenance much easier. But this isn't the time to get overwhelmed with some minimalist ideal. Remember that your goal isn't to have no possessions, but to really think critically about what you need and what you'll use. Unnecessary items will just add to the chaos, give you more to have to pick up and store on a regular basis, and reduce the usable space in your room. So try to bring into the space only things that are needed and useful. Be honest with yourself about this. When you start out with only necessary and useful items, you reduce the number of things you need to store, hide, maintain, or otherwise deal with. If you're already in this space and have more things than you reasonably have space for, your first step is going to involve figuring out what, of all those things, it's necessary for you to hang on to. Use your storage space wisely. In a small space, in addition to reducing the amount of stuff you have, it's absolutely critical to maximize your storage. Even more importantly, you should be matching your storage to your stuff. When your space is clean, every item should have a place, preferably one that's stashed away somewhere and not out on display. To accomplish this, you should ideally be using every space you can find, under things, behind things, and even above things. Use vertical space whenever possible, and never underestimate how much shit you can fit under a bed, especially if you can manage to elevate the bed a little bit. Tension rods, hooks, and flat storage are infinitely useful in small spaces. Small spaces require creativity, so look at every possible square inch for how it can be useful to you. If you have a closet, make sure you're using it to its full advantage. Most people just use a small part of the available space in their closets, the hanging bar, the floor, maybe a shelf above the hanging bar. But there's so much more space you can be utilizing. If you have a shelf above the hanging bar, don't just put some stuff on it and call it a day. Create another level or two of storage with modular shelves, baskets, dividers, or boxes. Same thing with the closet floor. At the very least, you can stack shoe boxes on the floor, and with just a little more effort, you can create more complex storage with shelving and storage boxes. Using the closet floor for shoe storage is really common, but shoes take up a lot of available floorage and waste just as much. If you have a lot of shoes to store, it's worth it to come up with a space-maximizing storage system that doesn't just occupy all of your floor space. There's even more closet storage space than most people don't think to use. The interior walls and the ceiling can hold a bunch of items with the help of hooks or bars. The inside of a closet door can be utilized when you employ hanging storage. Even the hanging bar can do double or triple duty with hanging storage for shoes, accessories, or even folded clothes, or bars that create a second level for hanging clothes. There are plenty of commercial closet organization solutions available, but you don't need to spend a ton of money on this stuff. Most can be improvised at home with stuff you already have, or found at discount stores for much less. Since it's all going to be behind a closet door, you don't need to worry so much about everything matching perfectly. Closets are great because you can fit so much shit in them, and then you can just close the door and hide everything. Speaking of which, try to hide as much as you can. Remember that open storage can look very messy, especially when you're dealing with a smaller space. Shelves and such are great for maximizing how much stuff you can fit into a smaller space, but when that storage is open and on display, it doesn't necessarily make things look neater and more streamlined. Enclosed storage will make everything look a little bit neater simply because it's out of the way. Matching storage is great, but expensive. So try to focus on getting everything stashed so that it's hidden but still accessible when you need it. As always, set up your storage in a logical way. Things you use the most need to be the most accessible, while less frequently used items can be tucked away in places that are harder to get to. Storage spots that are difficult to reach should be reserved for the stuff you won't need to access often. Use your drawers and closets to the best advantage that you can, but don't just cram them full of stuff, because the first time you need to get something out, you're going to end up with stuff strewn everywhere. And once it's out of its hiding spot, the likelihood of it getting back in there is pretty slim. If you have limited, or no, closet space, things become a little bit trickier, but by no means impossible. Without closet space, your storage situation may have to rely on shelves, freestanding furniture, or other open storage means. In this situation, too, it's good to try to hide things. Just keep in mind that it might require additional storage pieces like boxes and baskets. Without closet space, it may be worth investing in a covered or enclosed clothing rack to provide much-needed hanging space. And hide it, at least a little. Of course, that involves spending money that you may not have, so if that's not an option, it can totally be worked around. Just re-examine your drawer and cabinet space in freestanding pieces like dressers, as well as maximizing space under, above, and behind other things. Find some hidden storage. Walk around your room and identify one spot that's currently being wasted that could be used for storage. This can be under or behind existing furniture, inside a closet, or on top of something else. Once you've identified a space, go ahead and move some stuff there and see how it works. Everything in its place. As far as habits go, there's nothing more important than don't put it down, put it away. This is so crucial in small spaces. When you return every item to its predetermined home, you drastically cut down on visible clutter and keep everything looking streamlined and clean. Of course, this assumes that everything has a predetermined home, so if you don't have that planned out and squared away, make it your first priority. When you know where everything is going back to, you save yourself a lot of mental and physical energy by not having to work out a plan every single time you put something away. A place for everything and everything in its place. Maybe one of Aunt Edna's annoying old adages that makes you roll your eyes, but when you're dealing with limited space and a desire to keep it clean, it's actually pretty relevant. You're also going to need to do maintenance way more frequently. One or two things out of place can create a huge amount of visual chaos in a small space, so your maintenance habits are going to be vital. Resetting things back to clean daily will be incredibly helpful, as will keeping to a maintenance routine more frequently than perhaps you'd like. Yes, having to pick up or clean once or twice a day, every day, may suck a little bit, but letting things go for a few days becomes much less of an option in a small space. Getting used to doing a small amount of cleaning more frequently will greatly cut down on how often you'll need to do a huge total room clean. Not to mention that the amount of time and effort involved is really quite minimal. We're talking just a few minutes every day, something that can be accomplished during a commercial break, or while dancing to one guilty pleasure pop song. Also keep in mind that in a small space, garbage, laundry, and dishes need to be dealt with ASAP. There's not only the clutter aspect to deal with, but those things also have the potential to get stinky and gross, fast. By keeping on top of them, you can keep the funk away and discourage little critter friends from moving in and making themselves at home. Once ants, cockroaches, fruit flies, or mice move in, getting rid of them is time-consuming and soul-crushing. Better to just prevent the problem entirely. It can be a tough habit to build, but dealing with your dishes and trash immediately and your dirty laundry regularly and frequently is probably the biggest thing you can do to keep things from getting out of control messy. And when it comes to laundry, don't forget about the floor drobe. Oh God, the floor drobe! This is absolutely one of the biggest ways that small spaces go to shit very quickly. In a small space, every piece of clothing flung to the floor increases the chaos by a huge percentage. One of the best ways to keep your room looking clean, even if it really isn't all that clean, is to keep the floor clear. Put dirty clothes in the hamper, and put clean clothes away. Don't even begin to consider your floor as freestanding storage for your clothing. It's not. It's a place for you to walk and to put your furniture on. It's not a dresser. It's not a garbage can. And if you aren't careful, it can breed mess like you wouldn't believe. One pair of socks leads to a whole outfit, leads to every article of clothing you own strewn about the place. Put your clothes away. Defeat the floored robe. Mini challenge. Take 10 minutes and reset as much as you can back to clean. Put items away, throw trash out, and hang up or put away your clothes until the timer goes off. Dorm room drama. If you're in a dorm room and sharing with another person, all of these problems have the potential to end up twice as bad. Keep in mind that you will be tripping over each other's shit all the time, so it's in your best interest to come up with a plan to deal with it before you inevitably start hating each other. Small spaces plus people who barely know each other equals a recipe for disaster. The best way to avoid, or at least mitigate, most roommate problems is to anticipate them and make a plan for what happens when something arises. One of the most common things that causes strife between roommates is differing standards and effort regarding cleanliness. Ignoring this, or pretending you're somehow going to be the one exception to roommate drama, is a surefire way to set yourself up for conflict and aggravation. The close quarters of a dorm room can compound all roommate issues, mainly because you're already tripping over each other on a near-constant basis. When there's conflict between two people living in a tiny room, everything seems so much worse because there's nowhere you can retreat to, no door you can close between you and the problem. It's even more important when you live in a dorm, then, to start out with a solid plan, so that two or more people plus no real personal space doesn't have to equal resentment and anger. It may seem juvenile and unnecessary, but a chore list can be just the tool you need to keep your dorm room situation from devolving into a screaming hellscape of animosity and filth. It's non-judgmental, unemotional, and straightforward. Once you've figured out who's going to do what and when, there's no need for arguments or passive-aggressive behavior, at least when it comes to the state of your room. Nevertheless, problems will arise, and a written agreement can help you deal with them. Don't be naive and think that you'll be able to cruise through a roommate situation without anyone getting resentful or angry. It always happens. Best to walk into the situation with open eyes and fully prepared to handle the inevitable. Before dividing up the chores, sit down and have a conversation. Figure out if there are any tasks one of you doesn't mind doing at all, and which ones you loathe with every fiber of your being. Then determine the general magnitude of each task. An equitable division of chores isn't necessarily going to result from having the same number of tasks. It's the time investment that matters. Big chores and small chores, depending on how much time and effort they require, should be divided up so that neither of you feels like you're shouldering the majority of the work. Small spaces, big problems. If you're in this super fun situation of living in a small space within someone else's larger space, like a room at your parents' home or a rented room within a shared home, you have the added complication of having some items in common spaces that are not entirely under your control. All of the same principles still apply. Maximize your storage. Pick up a little every day. Plus all of the stuff you need to do in common spaces. Once again, dishes and trash are really important. Make sure you're keeping on top of those, not just in your own space, but in common spaces as well. Doing your part to reset and deal with your effect on common spaces is a necessary part of these kinds of living situations. That said, you may find that the common spaces are messier than you'd like, or that your possessions aren't being respected. Like all shared living problems, this one isn't ever going to get better until you talk about it. Have a conversation with the preset goals of defining everyone's roles and responsibilities in creating a clean and harmonious living situation. Keep in mind that if you don't like people messing with your stuff, that goes both ways. If, during your discussion, a workable plan for handling the common spaces arises, great! But it might not. If the person or people whom the space ultimately belongs to don't want to change their messy ways, The best you can do is advocate for yourself and your place in the home. Deal with your own stuff and your own mess, and decide if the living situation is something you can deal with. You may also want to focus your housekeeping efforts primarily on whatever small space you can call your own. Keeping your own room, space, cleaned up to your own standards may be the most control you have over the situation. So if that's the only place you can focus your attention, do that. Make your small part of the larger space a comfortable and happy space for yourself, and try to let go of being stressed out by what other people do with their stuff. Of course, you have the right to a comfortable place to live. So if the expectations and standards are drastically different between you and whoever you share space with, it might not be a livable situation for you. Parental units. Unlike in most other shared space arrangements like being roommates or living with a significant other, there's a considerable power imbalance when adult children live with their parents.